This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are with RotoWire.com. We are happy to be presenting today's show. Got a lot to talk about today, including recap of Pacers winning over the Knicks, command performance from Tyrese Halliburton. We'll talk plenty about that. Rate That Prop was so popular, we had to bring it back today. Minnesota versus OKC style. Len Hochberg is going to join us to do preview the Memorial Tournament. And then we got some money line bets and some other bets for baseball today. A lot of day games. We'll get you up to date, up to speed on the action in the day games. Five games ongoing right now. Nick, let's jump though into the NBA. What we start with this time of year. Unreal game from Tyrese Halliburton last night. As good a game as I've seen from a point guard in the playoffs.
I don't think that's an exaggeration, Jeff. I really don't. I mean, I think it was clear from the jump that this was going to be, you know, a game that Tyrese Halliburton wanted to put his imprint on. And you know, we were talking about it yesterday on the show and saying, you know, he's somewhat of a reluctant score first player. He can certainly do it when he has to, but prefers to be that distributor, right? I think he's always somebody that would rather have 15 assists than he would 30 points in a given game. But last night we got them both, 32, 15, and 12, four steals on the defensive end, and perhaps the single most impressive stat for Tyrese Halliburton, not a single turnover in a game that was competitive throughout, played 38 minutes. I think the best playoff game of his career, one of the best playoff guard games that we have seen in recent history. And you know, you contrast that with the New York Knicks, who had 17 assists and 17 turnovers as a team. I mean, Halliburton himself almost outpaced the Knicks in terms of those assists. And when you look at the potential assists, he was well over 20 last night. Honestly, could have had more, right? I mean, basically had a triple-double at the half and ended up joining Nikola Jokic and Oscar Robertson as the only two other players with a 30, 15, and 10 game in the playoffs, specifically 15 assists and 10 rebounds. But just a masterclass by Tyrese Halliburton and another really efficient offensive night for the Pacers as a whole. I mean, they are still, Jeff, shooting 50% from the field as a team in these playoffs. And they face some high-level opponents. They face some really good defenses. The Knicks, the Cavs, those were two of the best defenses in the NBA during the regular season. Even the Bucks got their act together defensively in the second half. I mean, it's to the point, Jeff, where I had to go over to StatHead and run a query and see, okay, where does this rank all time? So I looked up the best field goal percentage for a team during a playoff run, minimum of 10 games. So we're talking at least two rounds. Most of these teams advance beyond that. The 1990-91 Chicago Bulls shot 51.4% as a team during that playoff run. That's number one. Number two on the list, last year's Indiana Pacers shot 50.7% from the field. This year, they're at an even 50%. I mean, unbelievable to be able to do that 2 years in a row. And, you know, when you're pulling a sample from the early 90s, you know, we're talking about 35 years worth of playoff basketball here. Think of how much three-point volume has changed, right? And in general, even if you're having a good shooting night, you're hovering around 40%, that's going to bring down your overall field goal percentage. So to do that 2 years in a row with really high three-point volume, especially relative to the 90s and the early 2000s, just a wild, wild run for this Pacers team.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, I caught my eye too is this is also being done against a Knicks team that's not missing anybody. You know, you could make an argument for the last two playoff seasons that the Pacers have had maybe the best injury luck, at least in terms of opponent injury luck. No Giannis last year, no Dame for most of this year's playoffs against the Bucks. The Knicks didn't have Randall last year. They had other guys that were hurt. You know, obviously Brunson got hurt in Game 7 against them last year. No Garland for a number of games in the Cleveland series. So you could see that, okay, yeah, they've been really lucky. Well, not against the Knicks. This is all just the Pacers doing their thing.
Yeah, and something we've talked about with the Pacers throughout these playoffs is that they tend to force the opponent to make the adjustments, right? They're the team that all of a sudden mid-series, you have to make a lineup adjustment. And, you know, the Knicks and Tibbs specifically, it still feels like they're in desperation mode, right? They had the entire regular season to try to figure out this rotation. And instead, you know, Tibbs is playing five or six guys in a mid-February game against the Brooklyn Nets when you're up 20 in the fourth quarter. And all of a sudden now, midway through the Eastern Conference finals, you're thinking, oh no, well, we got to find some answers on this bench. And you're pivoting to Landry Shamet, you're pivoting to Cameron Payne, and all of a sudden Mitchell Robinson's in the starting lineup. So I think there has been somewhat of a failure here by Tibbs to not have this worked out, not have things ready for when you have to make these adjustments as the playoffs go along. But you know, Indiana's just been so good at forcing those adjustments, dictating pace throughout the playoffs, specifically in this series. I mean, last night, Jeff, as it felt, was easily the fastest paced game of this series, a pace over 102, fastest paced game that the Knicks have played in these playoffs, and by far the fastest that they played since round one against Detroit. And I think it's easy now to look ahead to game five and say, all right, well, Knicks need to slow it down. They were trying to do that last night, and you just can't. You just can't against this Pacers right. team that is so effective, getting rebounds, moving it up the floor. I mean, and this started early last night. I mean, the Pacers had 43 points in the first quarter. I mean, it's kind of a miracle that this was a close game for the most part. Knicks scored 35 in the first, but you in a must-win situation like this, like last night felt like it was for the Knicks, you can't come out and give up 43 in the first period.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was I keep pointing to a sequence early on. Jalen Brunson did his thing, had the defender on his hip, got an easy bucket to go. I think it was up to go up 6-5. The Pacers scored 4 seconds later, took the inbound, quick outlet. Siakam ran the floor, beat Towns on the other end. That simple. And that just, you can't do that. You can't let that sort of thing happen. And it's deflating too. It's deflating. And then you get into the sprint mode here where you're trying to catch up. It's tough. Mitchell Robinson, I thought, had a pretty bad game. You know, he got into foul trouble, but also, you know, he had his 7 rebounds, but defensively, I think he's out of place, and worse, offensively, he's out of place. He's there just to collect rebounds. Yeah. You know, you can't include him in the offense at all. He has a range of like 5-6 feet, and you know, that's who he is. And I it's not like he's going to change as a player. I don't mean this as a critique of him. It's just, that's who he is. And that's a chess play. He's like, they're better off if he's a chess piece deployed off the bench, but they can't do that. They feel like they can't do that right now. And so minus 20 in the game yesterday. So I wouldn't say he's been neutralized, but definitely diminished in his effectiveness. I thought that was huge. I thought the fact that the Pacers finally got something out of Ben Mathurin, got 20 points off the bench from him, 10 of 11 from the line. He had been having a hideous playoffs, you know, been losing time. He did it in 12 minutes last night too, Nick.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, there was a chance that we might not even see Ben Mathurin. It felt like, you know, Rick Carlisle had kind of seen enough of Mathurin. We've had some moments between those two, you know, over these last couple of years. But like you said, I mean, it's not like Mathurin saw extended run. I mean, he didn't really see any more minutes than he has in any game in this series, but fully took advantage of it, took advantage of the way this game was being officiated. And yeah, there were some calls certainly that went against the Knicks, you know, especially in the second half, but I didn't feel like the officiating was unfair. I mean, both teams took more than 30 free throw attempts. There was that one sequence with, I think, 8 or 9 minutes left where the Knicks were called for like 3 fouls in 9 seconds. And yeah, maybe that's a little bit ridiculous, but I don't think, even if you're the biggest Knicks fan out there, you look at last night and say that the officials cost you that game. You had no answers for Tyrese Haliburton.
You don't have my timeline.
Really, the Pacers. Well, and the Pacers also had an answer every single time, you know, the Knicks made a mini rally. You know, they had that. Yeah. They had the lead down to 5 or 6 a couple of times midway through the fourth. And, you know, it was either Haliburton or Pascal Siakam who always had the answer. And it was a quiet 30 points, I thought, from Siakam last night. But so many of his baskets late were ones that kind of kept the Knicks at bay. And, you know, Haliburton had a couple drives just uncontested to the rim in the fourth quarter. Had a few of those really throughout the game. And to go back to your point on Mitchell Robinson, like, if Mitchell Robinson's out there starting the game, especially, that makes it even worse that you gave up 43, right? I mean, the whole point of Mitchell Robinson is to deter those drives, to provide some defensive value, and he just hasn't done that.
Exactly right. Looking ahead, tomorrow's game five, in New York. Knicks are a 5-point favorite, total 222.5. Immediate leans from you, Nick?
I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing this series, Jeff, and just take the points with the Indiana Pacers if they are underdogs. I think this should be, not saying the Knicks shouldn't be favored at home, backs against the wall. I would make it, 2.5? You could talk me into 3.5. I think five is too much. I mean, the Knicks, I think you could fall into this narrative of, oh man, they have to win this game. They'll be in desperation mode. I don't know if that's a good thing for the New York Knicks. Like, this is a team that can kind of tighten up, right? And Indy has just been so consistent. You know, every now and then, they'll have a bad quarter or a bad half. They'll let things get away from them like they did in game 3 over the weekend. And that'll happen to any team over the course of a playoff run. But it would shock me if the Pacers came out flat in game 5. I think they know what they have in front of them. Yeah, the Knicks are aware that they absolutely can't lose this game, but the Pacers are killers, man, and they've done nothing but win games on the road throughout this playoff run, right? I mean, they've already won two at MSG. They swept the games in Cleveland in round two. I don't think they're deterred by any means by that crowd.
I think you're right about that. I just sometimes think things can get out of hand a little bit there, so we'll see about that. I'm going to be focusing on the pace. I think the tempo is so important here. I think the Knicks are going to do anything and everything to slow this game down, so I kind of like the under 222.5. It's a theory of the case sort of bet again. And we'll discuss that more in detail tomorrow. But we're going to start our preview of OKC Minnesota. We're going to do this both here and then with our Rate That Prop section as well. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering Roto15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Nick, we got about 30 seconds, so we'll just do we got a total sitting at 220.5. Last three games have gone over. Game one went under. What do you like in the total tonight in Timberwolves and Thunder?
That is a tough one. I don't have an official play on the total, Jeff. I did think it was an interesting number, though, because like you said, those last three have gone over. I would lean over here. I think Minnesota is going to continue to have problems slowing down OKC, and we'll get into it in the next segment. But I do think there could be some blowout potential for this game five.
More talk about the Western Conference Finals coming up on Rate That Prop next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Our producer, Michael Cohen, has carefully curated player props, and we will have a scaling meter from 1 to 5. We will rate the prop based on the player, their latest stats, and the price, and the vibes. We got a scale of 1 to 5, bad, okay, decent, good, and fantastic. Felt like this played out pretty well yesterday, Nick. Let's try it again. We go Western Conference Finals style. SGA over 45.5, PRA at minus 125. Rate that prop.
All right. Well, producer Michael, I think, did a pretty good job yesterday compiling some props that we really liked. I like this field as well. I'll tell you right now, we don't have any ones. We don't have any fives out there. But we're going to start out with a 3 out of 5 for SGA, looking at that PRA. Now, his points prop alone, by the way, is up to 33.5 for tonight at the DraftKings Sportsbook, which is kind of a wild number, but also very attainable for SGA. We've seen it multiple times, of course, in this series. You look at the ancillary stats here, had 19 assists plus rebounds in game four, but that's been the anomaly. He's averaging 11 assists plus boards for the series. So, you know, that would require him to score at least 35 points. If we're assuming that average, he's at about that same 11 assists plus boards for the postseason. So I am comfortable playing this, but it's not a slam dunk to me. You know, we need to acknowledge that he's unlikely to put up a near triple-double again. You know, he's had plenty of really good games, borderline great games in these playoffs, and still gone under this number. You know, you think back to that 31-9-5 in game one. He had 35-4-3 in game seven against Denver, 32-6-3 in game six against the Nuggets, 31-6-7 in game five. I could keep going on. These are really good games from SGA where he's still coming up short of this number. So bottom line, it's a little bit lofty for me. And even for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, we're asking for a borderline great game as compared to his usual very, very good game, which is what I would expect. So it's a 3 out of 5. It's a 3 out of 5. And maybe it's even closer to a 2.5. It's in stay away territory for me. And part of the reason for that, Jeff, is I do worry about the blowout tonight. OKC's coming back home. You know, this feels like kind of a coronation. If things start to go their way early on, you could see this start to snowball, especially given how well the Timberwolves role players played in game four. Yeah, you expect a leap from Anthony Edwards. Maybe you expect that from Julius Randle. I don't know if you can expect that kind of effort from Minnesota's supporting cast twice in 48 hours.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense there. And I think that the very last thing you said is kind of noteworthy too. In 48 hours, the quick turnarounds on these games, we don't have these longer breaks at all. A lot of travel, a lot of you know, light on recovery time. It's got this. It's the playoffs. It's part of the grind here. Rudy Gobert has replaced the Phoenix Suns as the scourge of VSiN. It's not just you, Nick. I know lots of people are staying away from Rudy Gobert. So we're going to talk about him here. Rudy Gobert, over 8.5 rebounds, plus 100. Rate that prop.
Totally reasonable number, totally reasonable price. I'm still giving this a 2 out of 5, Jeff. I, like many people at this network, have avoided betting Gobert in these playoffs. I'm not taking unders. I'm just staying away from that market in general because of the variance game to game. You know, he hasn't had any foul trouble in this series. You know, the minutes have actually been more consistent in the West Finals than they had been the first two series. But you always wonder, like, you know, is there going to be some sort of counter or rotation change? And Rudy Gobert is obviously the guy who could suffer, you know, if they make that decision. And, you know, I think as the series has gone on, with the exception of game three, of course, which we're just kind of throwing away, you know, you wonder if the Wolves feel like they need to put more scoring on the floor, especially if they do fall behind early. You look at some of the numbers for Gobert on and off the court. You know, the Thunder's offensive rebound percentage is virtually the same whether Gobert is out there or he's not. The Wolves are much better defensively with Gobert on the court, but they do take a pretty big hit offensively as well. They lose about 8 points per 100 possessions on the offensive end when he's out there. So I think game flow is ultimately going to dictate how much of Rudy Gobert we see tonight. Again, if OKC jumps out to a lead in the first quarter, we could see Chris Finch pull back. You need to find a way to cut into that. Rudy Gobert doesn't really help you in that regard. You know, getting this at plus money, yeah, it's appealing. He has exactly 9 rebounds twice in this series, had 7 offensive rebounds alone, by the way, in game 4. But I can't quite fully endorse this one.
All right. 2 on the scale there for Rudy, for that one there. We're going to talk a little bit about Chet Holmgren coming up next. But first, got to tell you about VSiN Pro, of course. Smarter bets. They start with VSiN Pro, and now is the time to join. Through May 31st, lock in 14 months for just $199, 2 extra months free when you use promo code PRO at checkout. That's less than 50 cents a day for a daily email with best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and replays on the VSiN Watch app, full access to VSiN.com's analytics, trends, and expert breakdowns, plus get the 2025-26 NFL betting guide when it drops this summer. This limited time offer ends May 31st, so don't miss out. Go to vsin.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO to sign up now. That's vsin.com/subscribe. All right. We're fading Rudy Gobert, as always. Let's go to Chet Holmgren. Over 15.5 points, minus 115. Rate that prop.
We're giving this one the green light, Jeff. I'm giving this a 4 out of 5 on the proprietary prop point scale here. So this number's up a little bit from where it was earlier in the series. There was a 13.5 for one of the games. I think 14.5 was kind of been the standard for Chet Holmgren. But it feels to me like he's only gained confidence as these playoffs and this series have rolled along. You know, got off to that really bad start in game one, but had a great second half and really has only picked up momentum since then. You look at the matchup numbers, he's really had success. You know, when Julius Randle is on him, he struggled a little bit more when Rudy Gobert is the primary defender, but still very comfortable taking Gobert off the dribble. He makes Gobert come out and respect him on the perimeter. I think that opens things up for the rest of this OKC offense. And, you know, maybe more importantly, when you're looking at this prop, the Thunder seem to be trusting Chet Holmgren a lot more than Isaiah Hartenstein right now. They're going away from those two big lineups. They kind of have to choose one or the other. Holmgren has played 32, 21, and 33 minutes over the last three games. And of course, the 21 minutes was the laugher in favor of Minnesota in game 3. Hartenstein, meanwhile, has played 27, 19, and just 16 over the last three games. So I feel more comfortable with Holmgren from a workload perspective, coming off of 21 points on 14 shots in game 4. I will acknowledge this could come down to 3-point shooting. You know, is he going to go 2 of 4, 3 of 5 from three, or is he going to go 1 of 6 because the volume is not going to be overwhelming? But I think he's playing with enough confidence. I like the Thunder's chances to keep exploiting that Minnesota defense tonight. And I think 15.5, pretty attainable number, like the price at minus 115. We'll play that one.
All right. Very well. Let's switch over to the Minnesota side again here. Ant-Man over 5.5 assists, minus 105.
Mm-hmm. This was the toughest one for me. I'm settling on a 3 out of 5 here. I thought about going to 4. You know, Edwards has gone over this number in each of the last three games of the series, but he's had exactly 6 assists in all of those games. So he's not blowing it out of the water by any means. And he's only averaging 9.3 potential assists for the series, which is a bit of a concern. That's about two fewer per game than he averaged in round two. I do expect Oklahoma City to continue to roll with what's worked, which is swarming Anthony Edwards. Even if he gets by that primary defender, you send one or two guys at him, get the ball out of his hands, make those role players try to beat you again. But, you know, by default, Edwards will be more aggressive tonight. I would be shocked if this is, you know, another 13-14 field goal attempt type of game. Even if I think Minnesota's losing, I think he's going down swinging. There's no way he's going to be as quiet as he was in game four. But that's one of those things that's easier said than done, right? It's like, what exactly do we want Anthony Edwards to do? Just go full peak Kobe mode and just, you know, fire up these contested jumpers over multiple defenders? Like, he's still got to play within what OKC is giving him. As we mentioned earlier, Minnesota's role players did shoot it extremely well in game four. I think that's another question mark. Ultimately, though, this number is low enough and the price is appealing enough at -105. It is closer to a play than a pass for me, but I'd just like to see more in terms of the potential assists for Edwards before I, you know, fully put the full weight behind this one. But we'll give it a 3 out of 5.
All right. Fully can appreciate that. I'm going to seek out the scoring props on him again, because I just think this is, again, correct the wrongs from the last game sort of type of game. What, one more for you. Dante DiVincenzo, over 2.5 made threes, +140.
So the price is what we're looking at here, +140, right? Yeah, I think we'll roll the dice on what could be the final game of the season for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So save for game three, you know, the Wolves have realized, I think, in this series that they need to find ways to keep up with OKC as opposed to try to shut down the Thunder offensively. You know, there's just only so much you can do in that regard. So that's led to more minutes for DiVincenzo off the bench, more opportunities for him. In the three, what I would call competitive or semi-competitive games in this series, he's put up 12, 6, and 8 three-point attempts, so 26 total attempts over those three games. You know, the Wolves will absolutely need him to provide some level of a spark off the bench tonight if they have any hope. You know, confidence seems to be back for DiVincenzo. Coming into this series, remember, he was shooting only 25% from deep for the playoffs. He's now 9 of 16 over those last three games. So if this was -120, -130, it would probably be a 2 for me. But look, if you're giving me this at +140, color me intrigued. We'll give it a 4 out of 5.
All right. On the way out, I'm going to force you to make a quick pick on -8.5. What do you got on the side?
Don't love the number, but it's got to be Thunder or nothing for me tonight.
All right. Len Hochberg joins us next to help us preview the Memorial coming up on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson in the saddle with you as always. Got a day-heavy baseball slate on this Wednesday. 6 games in action right now. Red Sox currently leading the Brewers 3-1. We're in the bottom of the fourth in Milwaukee. Jake Bowers with a solo homer, accounting for that lone run for the Brewers. Chicago White Sox have jumped on the New York Mets. It was 5-0, now 5-3 as we just reached the end of the third inning. Dodgers up 3-1 on the Guardians in the top of the sixth. Giants leading the Detroit Tigers 3-0, although Tigers do have the bases loaded right now in the bottom of the fifth. Tampa Bay up 3-0 at home on the Twins, bottom of the fifth there. And early in the Athletics-Astros matchup, 0-0 in the bottom of the second. Did have some big news coming out of Houston earlier today. We'll hit on that later in the show. But without further ado, we have one of our favorite guests joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, Len Hochberg, our golf expert, golf betting, golf DFS, does a ton for us over at rotowire.com. You can find him on Twitter at Len Hochberg. Len, welcome back to the show. Looking forward to breaking down the Memorial with you. But first and foremost, we had some big news in the PGA earlier this morning. Changes coming to the Tour Championship. Tell us about those changes. Tell us about your reaction and how this is being received in the golf world.
Yeah, Nick, Jeff, great to be with you. At a time in the world where nobody can agree on everything, I think everyone is in complete agreement that the starting strokes format for the Tour Championships that's been in effect for the past 6 years has just been not well received, to say the least. And the Tour announced that it is going away, and the Tour Championship beginning this year in August is going to return to just a regular stroke play tournament. The same 30 top 30 golfers will be there. And it was just, it wasn't well received by the players. It wasn't well received by the fans. I think the PGA Tour was just trying to do something to make its season ending tournament, you know, something bigger than it could be. And, you know, it's a difficult situation because it's the playoff event and it's the championship tournament, but it's not the biggest tournament of the year. The majors always were and always will be the biggest tournament. So anyway, it was a big step in the right direction to just change the Tour Championship or return the Tour Championship to a regular, normal tournament, Bravo PGA Tour.
Yeah, and I understand they wanted to make like leading the Tour Championship into that point be worth something. I get that, but they're trying to make it, you know, create it as the fifth major, and it's just not going to happen. You know, if there's anything that's the fifth major, it's the TPC, and even that's not the fifth major. You know, it's just there are four majors. Don't mess with what works.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation for golf because the majors are bigger and it doesn't crescendo like the NBA or baseball or football or hockey or any of those. And, you know, they did toy with the idea of having match play to have a championship match. But then you're changing the format of the championship tournament from what you've used the entire season. And that doesn't work either. And good on them for not going to match play. It's not optimum because you could just get the 30th ranked guy to win the season ending championship. But hey, the Dallas Mavericks won the lottery. Those things happen in sports. This is certainly better than the starting strokes format.
All right, Len, let's get over to the Memorial, which of course starts in Dublin, Ohio tomorrow morning. We have Scottie Scheffler in the field. He is, of course, a heavy, heavy favorite, plus 280 to win the tournament. No one else shorter than 16-1 right now over at DraftKings. And that is because Rory McIlroy is not in the field this week, Len. There's been some criticism, fair or unfair. Maybe we'll get to that. But what do you make of the Rory situation? You know, is this a little bit overblown given that, you know, he does play, you know, a more packed international schedule maybe than some realize?
Yeah, anything with Rory McIlroy will be overblown and over everything. It's just who he is and the lightning rod that he is. And he's skipping the tournament for the first time in 7 years, and it was a little bit of a surprise. But he has really taken a tack of wanting to play in national championships. And next week is the Canadian Open, Canada's national championship, followed by the U.S. Open, United States' national championship. You can't play 3 weeks in a row with the third week being a major. I think we're going to just see McIlroy make some changes in his career as he's getting to be a bit of an elder statesman now that he's won the Masters, now that he's completed the career Grand Slam. I mean, so much of what's left for him is gravy. He's agreed to go play in Australia this year and next year at the Australian Open, another national championship. In December, he's going to go play in October, he's going to go play in India, a new tournament on the DP World Tour. That is going to be a huge deal. Talk about growing the game globally. That's what Rory McIlroy wants to do. He will be criticized for it. That's just who he is. But it's just one small step to skip this tournament for a lot of other reasons.
Len, when we've talked about the Memorial before with you, you've mentioned that this is Muirfield Village here, where they're playing this tournament, is the type of course where you need almost every shot, every club in your bag. I imagine that remains true. They haven't done anything to change that much. So is there a type of golfer that favors that type of course?
You know, it does favor someone who does everything pretty well. Scottie Scheffler is one of those guys who does everything pretty well, or even a lot better than pretty well. But there are some others as well. This was one of the five hardest golf courses the last 2 years, harder than some major courses, always in the top 10. The beauty of Muirfield Village is everything gets harder later. As difficult it is to hit off the tee, it's long, it's narrow. The green complexes are even more diabolical and being on the green. So it gets harder when you get closer to the hole. The back nine is harder than the front nine. The finishing holes 16 to 18 are harder than any other three-hole stretch on the course. you really do need to have, you know, be able to hit the ball with your driver. You need good iron play. You need good wedge play. You need good putting play. You don't need to be excellent in any of those areas, but you need to be pretty good across the board, or Muirfield Village will get you.
Folks, you can start your day with an edge and a game plan. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast is your first look at the day's betting line, sharp action, and market movement. In just 15 minutes, you'll get everything you need to know to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of the line moves, all before your morning coffee is gone. Hosted by VSiN's team of trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. You can check it out, the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or go check it out on the VSiN Watch app. The sharpest way to start your betting day is with the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. Len Hochberg, our golf expert at rotowire.com, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Len, strategy-wise, how do you approach this specific event? We got a 72-man field, 50 in ties, end up making the cut. So how does that change how you might bet this tournament, how you might construct a DFS lineup?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a challenge. And looking over the prices and stuff, I was trying to figure out, do I want to go with like a top-heavy lineup with a Scheffler, and then you have to dip into the 6,000s, or a more balanced lineup? And I think you could argue both ways. I mean, yes, let's take Scottie Scheffler, put him in there, 13-3. That really limits his down low. There are some good guys in the 7s. I did struggle to find guys in the 6s. I think there are a lot of guys in the 9s and 8s, and you can pile up 3, maybe 4 of those guys, and build your lineup that way. You know, 70% of the field is going to make the cut. Only 72 guys, at least 50, probably more, will make the cut. So you can dip into the 6s. It's just, you know, it's very hard to identify which ones are good and which ones, you know, are really going to contend this week, and which ones are just going to be around for 2 days and leave. So it is. I do see an option to go either way this week, depending on what you particularly like.
Victor Hovland won this 2 years ago. He's 30-1 this year, or 5-1 for a top five. Do either of those appeal to you, Len?
You know, not really. I mean, it's so dangerous every time we talk about Victor Hovland, because we know his upside. His upside is so great. And he's already won earlier this year. He came out of the blue, but he's sort of gone back to where he came from. The victory was an outlier. And yes, it could happen again. But not really big on him this week. And he won here 2 years ago. So, it is dangerous to fade someone like him. But that's where I'm at.
All right, Len, we'll take you out on this. You mentioned there is some value in that 7,000 range if you're playing DFS on DraftKings. Who's a name that you like, a longer shot to keep an eye on?
You know, Denny McCarthy's been really good this year. He just keeps getting better in his career. 2 years ago, we just talked about Victor Hovland winning. Will he beat Denny McCarthy in a playoff? Denny McCarthy is the best putter, one of the best putters on tour. He really also has improved the long game. That's always been his struggle, but he has been incredibly good in the long par fours, 7 par fours of over 450 yards at this course. He's played well on some difficult courses, and he's a longer shot. He's in the upper 7s. You can even get him on a top 10 at 3-1, something like that. He's about 45-1 on an outright. I do like him.
Len Hochberg, everybody, check out his great work for us over at rotowire.com. Find him on Twitter at Len Hochberg. Switching over to baseball, when we come back, we'll have some score updates for you. Jeff Erickson's best bets for the Wednesday night slate coming up next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Got about 15 minutes left in the show. We'll give you some baseball score updates. We'll get all of Jeff Erickson's best bets for the Wednesday night slate. But keep it here on VSiN. We got a packed schedule coming your way the rest of the day. As always, make it rain with Adam Schein. That's coming up next. He's going to have Ariel Epstein on the show. She'll give out her favorite prop bets for both the NBA and Major League Baseball. Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard. That's coming up at 4 p.m. VSiN Primetime with Scott Seidenberg starts up at 7 p.m. Eastern. heavy day slate in Major League Baseball today, Jeff. We'll give you some updates on what's going on. Red Sox still leading the Brewers 3-1. We're now in the bottom of the fifth there. Two runners on for Milwaukee. Bryce Turang just added another steal to his tally. White Sox clinging to a 5-3 lead over the New York Mets. We're in the bottom of the fourth. Dodgers leading the Guardians 3-1. Bottom six there. Giants trimming into that lead with the Tigers. Tigers up 4-3. In the top of the sixth. Rays still up 4-0 on the Minnesota Twins. And the Athletics, not the Oakland Athletics, have opened up a 2-0 lead on the Houston Astros. Top of the third, two outs. Brent Rooker with an RBI double for that second run. We'll keep an eye on those games, Jeff. But want to go to a note on the Houston Astros. Some bad news for that pitching staff. Ronel Blanco, we knew there were some issues with that arm. He's been getting evaluated for the last week. News finally came through earlier today, done for the season.
Yeah, unfortunately, he got that second opinion. And anytime you hear that a pitcher is getting a second opinion, it doesn't always feel like it. Yeah, the first one's probably pretty bad. And it's just bad news coming around. You're hoping to find it really wasn't as bad as we thought it was or something like that. It's almost never good when they're going for that second opinion. So this is another pitcher down for the Astros. And that's kind of the problem for them right now is, they lost Spencer Arrighetti to that really fluke injury in batting practice there, broken thumb on that lost him for a couple of months. Luis Garcia had a setback in his recovery. They're already without Christian Javier. Hayden Wesneski's out for the year. They're using Ryan Gusto and Colton Gordon in their rotation right now. And Lance McCullers, who's starting today, and who hasn't been able to go deep into games. So basically, this is like the old-timey Atlanta Braves. Is spawn insane and pray for rain. It's Valdez and Brown and look around. I don't know. Tried to rhyme at the moment there. I wouldn't be a good freestyle.
That was pretty good.
It wasn't too bad, I guess. But they're hurting in their rotation is the takeaway here.
They are. Well, we did get an update that Spencer Arrighetti did play catch today, Jeff. So we're moving in the right direction there. Still wouldn't expect to see him for at least another 3 or 4 weeks, but we will see. Some patchworking to be done in that Houston rotation. Let's move over to some plays for the rest of the slate today. Pirates Diamondbacks. This is a mid-afternoon start out in Arizona. Diamondbacks -130 on the money line. Pittsburgh +114. Total coming in at 7.5. Paul Skeens going up against Zach Gallen. That should be a fun one.
Yeah, it should be. Last night, we saw a really good outing from Corbin Burns, 7 strong innings. And then Kevin Ginkle and company proceeded to blow it in the eighth and gave up 7 runs in the eighth inning, blew a great outing there. I like to spend a lot of time in this space ripping on the Pirates, piling on. That's what I do. I'm a front runner. But I'm going to pick the Pirates on the money line tonight. And it's a really simple reason. I'm getting plus money in Paul Skeens. It's a really principle bet. Last night when I looked it up, it was +110. So that's what we'll log it as, but it's +114 now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Going up against Zach Gallen, it's not just that it's Skeens in plus money. It's also Zach Gallen going up against here is the other thing I like. Gallen has really been a tough watch this year. He's had 3 good outings, all against New York teams. And after that, it's been pretty sketch all around there. It's been tough for, to back Gallen. 5.25 ERA, 1.36 whip. Supposed to be one of their aces. And meanwhile, they have a bad bullpen as well. Arizona's offense is scary. So, getting behind Skeens is tough. I wouldn't be betting like run totals or anything like that on the under, but I just think Pittsburgh's got the better pitcher in this matchup and we're getting plus money. So let's out of principle take it.
Another afternoon game coming our way. The Marlins at the Padres, San Diego -166 on the money line, total 8.5 here. Padres are sending Kyle Hart to the mound. He's a lefty. Marlins rolling out Sandy Alcantara, putting that 8.04 ERA, Jeff, on the line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Will Alcantara continue to struggle? I know the Marlins want to trade him at the trade deadline, but what can he bring? The strikeouts are creeping up a little bit. It's one thing I kind of like there. Marlins are a tough space defensively too. Real bad defensive meltdown by Ronnie Simon last night at second base. Tough to watch. He was actually crying and got pulled from that there. It was a very weird outing. Nick, you'll appreciate this. Yeah, I know you like to dig into the archives to see strange things that are happening. Steven Kolek gave up 6 earned runs in the first inning last night. First, and then hung around long enough to get the win. It's the first time a pitcher has given up 6 first inning runs in one since Mark Burley in 2006. First time with 6 earned runs in the first inning since Bartolo Colon in 1999. So just a weird anomaly of a game here. The Marlins are facing Kyle Hart, who's a lefty. He got called up to replace Michael King. Could be good at home. If you like playing the under 8.5, I could get behind it if you think Alcantara can at least be decent. I think Alcantara's Ks could be decent in this one here. 6-3, 8-4 in his last 4 starts. He's starting to pick up the strikeouts. So I'm going to go over Alcantara strikeouts at 4.5 at +120.
Big game in the National League tonight. Braves continue their series in Philadelphia. Phillies -170 on the money line. Total set at 7.5. Fun pitching matchup here. AJ Smith-Shawver going up against Zach Wheeler. Braves need a win, man. It felt like they had kind of pulled themselves out of that early season hole. They're hanging around in the NL wild card picture. They've now lost 5 out of 6, lost 2-0 last night with Spencer Strider on the hill.
They did. Strider hit Bryce Harper in the elbow. Harper day-to-day, x-rays were negative on that. That is the same elbow that got surgically repaired. You know, he has an elbow guard. It missed it. Found a way to miss it still somehow. So watch to see about that one there. I hope we get to see this game. 88% chance of rain. So I'm trying to avoid any sort of starting pitcher props tonight. I'd want to get behind like a Wheeler win because I think instead of maybe the money line, go the Wheeler win. Although it's funny, the money line is lower than I would have think given the starting pitching matchup here. -155 instead in favor of the Phillies. I will actually get behind Kyle Schwarber and go over total bases, over 1.5 total bases with him. Still getting plus money at +130. If you want to get on the money line at the for the Phillies at -155, just realize you might not have Harper, and that might be one of the reasons why that it's a little bit lower than you think, giving the pitching matchup.
Cincinnati Reds are on the road in Kansas City. Reds -120 on the money line. Another game with a fairly low total at 7.5. Noah Cameron, lefty on the hill for the Royals. Hunter Green making his second start for the Reds since coming off the IL.
I'm opening myself up for claims of hypocrisy here, Nick, because on paper, this is a mismatch starting pitching-wise. Green versus Noah Cameron. Cameron making his 4th career start. They've all been good starts, though. That's one thing. He's 1-1 with a 0.93 ERA so far on the season. Not a super hard-throwing lefty. Doesn't get a ton of strikeouts. 14 strikeouts over 19 innings. You know who else is like that? It was Bailey Falter. And he did that. You know, he matched up against the Reds last week and shut them down. And I kind of feel the same sort of vibe here with Cameron. And Cameron's been pitching pretty well so far. So I'll take the plus price, the +100 for the Royals on the money line, even though I've got nothing but love for Hunter Green and L.A. De La Cruz and those 900 plus yards would be huge. Feet of home runs from L.A. last night there. I don't know if you got a chance to see those. Pretty fun stuff.
Of course. I keep a very close eye, Jeff, on anything Ellie De La Cruz. It's time for our best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 over at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. If you do that, you'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN steps in to complete the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Again, that's VSIN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, a lot of good Major League Baseball bets you just handed out for us. Which of those will be your best bet tonight?
I'm going to go with the Pirates on the money line, +110, maybe even +114, depending where you look now. Paul Skeens, get him at plus money.
All right, there we have it. I got a couple for you here. We're going to a little bit of a niche prop here for game 5 between the Thunder and the Timberwolves. Alex Caruso, over 1.5 made threes tonight. Just got to hit 2. We're getting that at +120. Taking a little stab at Anthony Edwards, over 39.5 points plus rebounds plus assists. I think he's going down swinging tonight. We'd like OKC -4 in the second half, -112. We'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon, but for now, make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yeah.